the others are. So let's do J and P, and we'll come back to that. Okay, here we go. So you've got your energy source, you've got your preferred way of processing information, you've got your preferred means of making decisions with that information. The last one then is, how do you prefer to live your life? And again, be careful of a dictionary definition, because judging always sounds very negative, and perceiving sounds somehow enlightened. But what it means is this: if you are a J by preference, when the decision has been made, what you want is closure and a clear plan of how that decision is going to be implemented. So you don't want ambiguity, you don't want variables of things could change if new information comes available, a clear plan of how that decision is going to be implemented, and things are then settled, ordered, and you can move on with your clearly defined plan. J's are great planners. They've got a clear plan, they know exactly where they're going, and usually it will take something like the second coming or an earthquake to divert them from the plan that has been agreed. Because once J's start planning, they never usually want to move. P's, on the other hand, even if a decision has been made, love to remain open to the possibility that new information may become available and therefore cause them to change their mind, even after the decision and the plan has been agreed. Nothing causes more tension between J's and P's than the fact that J's, once the decision has been made, the plan is there, let's make it happen. P's, on the other hand, usually are always looking, even when they're working towards the plan, is there another way of doing it? Is there more information that may become available which causes us to be able to improve what it is we're doing? Yeah? So the P tends to be much more flexible, much more open-ended, much more spontaneous in the way that they approach the task and the life that they live. J's are planners by nature. The perceivers are natural processors. They want to know where they're going. They want to know where the end goal is. But they work with the assumption that life is far too complex and the variables far too diverse to be able to have an absolute blinkered plan of how they're going to get there. What they'll do is they'll go, I know where we're going, and we're going to surf and see what happens and react to the changes and the variables that come along. And we'll still get there, but I'm not convinced that we're just going to be able to put a concrete roadmap straight down and just follow every step.
Steve.
Hello.
How does that differ where you have a planner who wants that plan, but he's also always want to be open to something that could come up that might be better? Is there a difference?
Yes, you've got two hands, and what we're trying to do at the moment is work out which is your preferred way of operating. Okay, so you can do both. Both can do both. But by the time we finish this, you'll find there's one of them is slightly more attractive to you, I suspect. The classic then is this: how do you approach deadlines? Or even how did you when you were younger, before the onions started to get layered upon? So if you imagine that here's my task, I set my task. Once the J has a clear lock on what the task is and when the deadline is, they will construct this fantastic plan that allows them to work in nice, neat, ordered, structured daily task. You see how nice and neat it is? No diversions. And also, there is that wonderful thought that the project actually is completed ahead of the deadline. Do you notice that? Because J's don't usually like working under extreme last-minute pressure. They like to be able to know the plan is organised, this is where we're going, this is how we're going to get there, and this is the steady way that I'm going to make that happen. P's, on the other hand, same task, same deadline, slightly different approach to the completion of that task. Because what you've got is, the task is agreed, P's are off exploring. All that squiggly stuff is not that they're being lazy, doing nothing. They are exploring all the possibilities of what could be. Endless processing, thinking, reading, trying, as it were, to find what is the best way of completing that task. What is the best thing I can create? And it's then only the pressure of the deadline which starts to force the fact that they really might have to put this onto paper. And it's the real deadline pressure which finally forces them to the final view of what it is they're going to have to deliver. Then you get that huge frenetic burst of energy, 48 hours from the deadline, no sleep, Pro Plus, coffee, whatever other drugs you can pile into your system to keep you awake for the 48 hours. That it lands on the desk, 1:01, you've met your deadline, but you then go back to bed for 2 days to recover, vowing you will never ever leave it to the last minute ever again, and Lord, please can you make me slightly more of a J. But that's really the way they work. And often, they produce their very best work under the pressure of a deadline. Note, this is not an excuse for missing deadlines. P's who miss deadlines deserve to get shot. What you can often do, though, is if you know what your team, how they prefer to function, what you can do is you can create environments for them to work most effectively. So if you are a boss and you have a P person working for you, give them a concrete deadline with absolutely no possibility of movement. Any hint of weakness that actually if they ask for an extension they might get 2 more weeks simply gets factored into their equation that the real pressure doesn't even begin until they get 2 days from that new extensioned deadline. And never, ever let them get away with not delivering on time. I always used to say to my guys, still do, I will let you function the way you prefer, but you have to meet the deadlines that are there. If you don't, the next project you will function as a J and submit to me all the way through the process, the progress that you're making. You earn the right to function as a P because it's frightening for J's to watch it. Because J's are going, what, you haven't even started yet? Whereas they're nearly finished. The P often needs the pressure of a deadline, as I said, to force them into where they go. Now, if you were to ask a J, do you like surprises? Most of them look at you with a slightly pained expression because they think the answer probably ought to be yes. But the real answer, the real question they're about to ask you is, well, is it going to be a good surprise or a bad surprise? Because J's, you see, their desire is to have life under control as possible, is what they really want to do is weed out any possibility for variables. And surprises can be both good and bad. So therefore, honestly, slightly reluctantly, a lot of J's will say, do you know, I'll do without surprises in my life. I'd rather just know where we're going so I can plan accordingly and I can make sure I know what's happening. P's, on the other hand, well, surprises are part of the rich tapestry of the life to be lived. And they know that part of the cost of that is sometimes surprises will be negative. And they'll have to work really hard to surf around them. But every now and again, there's the most wonderful surprise that happens. And it's that excitement that tomorrow is different from today and I don't really know what's going to happen completely means that getting out of bed in the morning is worthwhile for the P. Most P's I know see routine as a necessary evil rather than something to be loved. And a lot of P's, if you look on their desks at work, will have at least 5 different self-help or time management schemes that they've worked with over the last 12 months, trying desperately to make themselves slightly more disciplined and organized in their working world. But no matter how hard they try, it always seems to be a struggle rather than a joy. Whereas if you are a right-handed J, discipline and structure and routine is simply the most effective way to live your life, and it is hard to comprehend why anyone would countenance even trying to live a different way. Most J's I know are brilliant at making lists. And they have a list for today. And every day has its list of tasks that need to be achieved. And they work their way through the day merrily, crossing off, ticking things that they finished, taking huge satisfaction from that particular task. I've even known J's who will write things onto their list, even when they've done them, simply for the sheer joy of being able to cross them off as another task that's been achieved. And in a way that I've never fully comprehended, as the day progresses and today's list gets gradually crossed off and completed, mysteriously from a parallel universe emerges tomorrow's list. And honestly, I'm watching, it's like a sleight of hand magic trick. It's not there, they're working, it's there. And there it is, ready for tomorrow, tomorrow's tasks, tomorrow's list. Today's tasks have been done. We can now move on to the next compartmentalized activity of our day, be it rest or play or look after the children. But most J's find it very hard to play until the work is finished. They're just responsible like that. P's, on the other hand, can play anytime, any place, anywhere. As long as they know there's a few hours at the end of the day, they can cram in the work and the deadline and they can actually do it. Why would they want to run the risk of missing out on some fun that could be had? You recognize any of this? So, therefore, the great motto of the P is, why do now what I can put off until the pressure's really on? Especially when I could use that time that's created to explore untold possibilities for merriment and amusement with my friends. Classic thing is, this is usually worked out, if you have a J and a P who are married to each other, it's worked out most weekends at home. Poor little P comes home, having worked hard all week and learning to discipline their life and to be as organised and as structured as they can in their work. And of course, using their other hand has taken a huge amount of energy from them. But it's never mind, it's Friday night, they wake up Saturday morning, the whole of the day spreads before them. I wonder what we might do today. No list, no discipline. They come down in the morning, put the coffee on. There on the kitchen table is the list. Just when they thought they'd escaped, there it is. List of all the different tasks that need to be done around the house and the home and the shopping over the weekend. But P is ever resourceful. And once they got over the initial shock that there's a list there, they then realise that there is no deadline. Well, that's okay then, because honestly, it probably can be done between about 5 and 7 o'clock on Sunday evening. It's not going to spoil my Saturday or my Sunday morning. So I'm going to take my coffee, my paper, I'm going to return to my bed where I'm just going to enjoy chilling out, doing my own thing, not having anyone else tell me what to do. Comes downstairs, more or less lunchtime by now, everything is spotless. Every task on their list has been done. Wife, in my case, steaming in the corner, smoke emerging out of each ear, paper being crumpled and thrown down in a way which only communicates that I must be in trouble for something. Morning, darling. Oh, everything okay? What happened to my list of jobs? Well, you were never going to do them. I mean, I was never going to do them. I was going to do them later. And what's going on there, you see, is the classic JP conflict, which is P's can play and relax at any time. J's usually need closure on work so that they can enjoy themselves. So, while there's still mess in the house, how can I possibly enjoy the weekend? Because until that's finished, I can't move on to play. Anyone sort of recognise any of that, or are you all just much more enlightened than I am and struggling with it? So there's a few clues as to which one of those you might be by right hand or left hand. Interestingly, most people are able to recognise this one probably easier of all, at least in terms of which is their right hand, because they know either their whole life is disciplined and organised and controlled, or they try really hard to make it happen at work, but honestly, when they get home and they get free, the last thing they want is yet more structure, lists, and discipline. How many right-handed J's are there? And how many right-handed P's are there?
Sandwiched.
How many people are not sure? Okay, what do you think, Sue, is the ought and should for this one? Yeah. If people are not sure, it's 99.9% that they're a true type P who has simply learnt how to bring discipline to their life. And when you have a working mother who's married to a J and having to, as it were, discipline family life, work life, home life, leisure life, ministry life, the reality is you simply have to learn how to do J. And often what happens is you lose something of that spontaneous fun that actually you were more naturally gifted at. The way you look at it is look back at what you were like when you were in high school or college. Before you had all that layering, when did you finish your essays? How much spontaneity did you like in the day that you lived? How much plans did you put in? Where did you plan to go on vacation? Most J's start planning the moment they get back. Because part of the joy of going on holiday is being able to plan what they're going to do when they're there and to make sure they've learned all the information that allows them to fully maximise the opportunity they're given. Most P's, honestly, quite like the idea of going, well, there's my 2 weeks off. I wonder where we'll go. Why don't we leave it to the last minute and see what amazing deals are available? Why don't we just go to the airport and see what happens? So for the P's, that is so exciting. For the J's, it's like having root canal treatment. Because all they'll do is worry about it for the next, well, what if there's no flights? What if there's no holidays? How can I begin planning, let alone packing, where we're going to go if we don't know? Yeah? So what do you think, Sue? It's kind of quite a big outing of, you know, most P's wish they were J's at times, and then they thank God they're not at others. Most J's think that if you were to go back to the original perfect creation, everyone would have been a J. And that actually part of the fall, and a combination of the fall and God's sort of Friday afternoon sort of lackadaisical attitude, allowed a genetic defect into the DNA of humankind, which has mutated ever since to the point where 50% of the population now betray that kind of fallen P nature. But when we get to go to heaven, everyone will again be disciplined, ordered, structured, and will function in a much more productive way than they currently do. I'm only having a laugh at the J's because deep down they know they're so glad God didn't make them a P. Isn't that right?
That's right.
That's right, yeah. I just know them too well. So anyone else still not sure? Anyone else surprised? And anyone else beginning to understand why some of that disciplining of work and culture over the years has been such a dying thing sometimes?
You said it was 50-50.
50-50. If I draw these up for you, you can see. So basically what we've got is, you've now got your four things. And if you think of the four spectrums, wrong word, the four dimensions, okay? As I said, this is 50-50, and the male and female are equal. This is 70-30, and there's no gender issue. This is 50-50 in the population, but this has a gender issue. 70% of males are T, and 70% of females are F. And the last one is 50-50, and there's no gender issue at all. So, Let's kind of, the last 40 minutes, let's play with this now. What I want is to gather in from you what you think your four letters are to the best of your ability. I'm not asking you to nail your colours to the mast completely. I will then help clarify, because I will tell you bits about your type, and then I'll start looking at you and trying to see what God's doing as well, which is always more frightening, so that's the bit I like most. But if I'm a good teacher, I've learned over the years, I have to teach everyone how to have access to this so that we can all play. Particularly the sensors out there who like to know they've got all the information. I could not have given you more today, sensors, by the way. I've given you everything I have on each of the individual components. So I hope you appreciate that. Okay, let's go around. What have we got then? I'll put it over here so I can keep that one. So Joyce, so we'll go around this way. So Joyce, what have we got so far?
What did I come up with?
Yeah.
EFM good.
What was the middle letter? N or S?
E.
Yeah.
N. F. J.
Great. Okay.
Cindy.
How do you spell it? Is it C or an S?
C.
Great. No, don't worry.
ISTJ.
Great. Now,
ENTP.
One of God's favorites. Michelle?
ENFP. Multiple personalities.
Sarah? Go on, what have you got so far? Anything that's concrete?
The only thing that's concrete for me is the I.
Okay.
And I'm just confused.
We'll play another time. See?
I-N-T.
Sorry?
I-N-T.
Wow. Gosh, you must die doing what you do. How you do that is a mystery to me. Yemi, how do I spell that?
Y-M-E.
Okay, Yemi, that's great.
Okay,
E-N-F-E. Great. Right, around the front, Jo. Christina?
E-S-F-J.
Yeah. Chris? Okay. Johnny, isn't it? I keep wanting to write Dobby, but I can't. Because this is going to go out live on the DVD, and everyone will know then you're called Dobby. It's great.
ISFP.
Wow. It's Glenn. I'll put the rest over this side, I think. How many more? We've only got two more to go, actually. Let's try and see how I squeeze them on. Jean, what are you?
ISTJ.
Yep, and?
I-N-T-J.
Deb. Deb, sorry.
I-N-T-J.
Wow.
This is going live on the DVD. We better put some letters next to me. So for today, I'll be an I-S-T-P.
Great. There you go, you're happy now. So, what have we got then? Well, what a motley crew. Great variety.
Yeah.
Haven't we? Have we got any that... So we've got a few ENFPs, haven't we? So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 of those. Any others that are the same? ISTJ, I think we had two of those, didn't we? Did we? Yeah, so two of those. No. ISFP, INTJ. So all the rest are unique. Wow, this is great. How exciting is this? So let me tell you a little bit about each of the different types. So you can see what they recognize. ENFJs are some of the most natural gatherers and disciplers of people known. They love, as it were, helping people fulfill their potential. And because they're so organized as well, people invariably seek them out because they're able to bring both wisdom and possibilities for people's future, but also organized enough to actually help them deliver it as well. The great thing about the ENFJ, you see, is they're usually pioneers. They're usually wanting to explore the new frontiers. And the great danger with them often is they do this. Okay, there is load in terms of task and people, and here is time. ENFJs, because actually everyone knows they really care, and they've got real wisdom in terms of helping people fulfill their potential, and they're also organized and disciplined enough to help you do it, everyone seeks them out at their best. So what happens is, they take on, as time goes on, they take on more and more load, because more and more people come to them, and more demand is made of them. And because they love vision, as the ENFJ, they're suckers for apostles who want to use them to help fulfill their visions. Because if I sell a vision to Joyce, you see, she finds it almost impossible to say no. If I come to her and say, Joyce, you are the perfect person to help me with this. I really believe the Lord's called you to this. Look at the potential for seeing the kingdom come. Look at the people that could be released into freedom, and I need you to help me. The chances are that the captivation of both vision and the potential for people and the fact that I'm asking her will make it very hard for her to say no. Because what she says is, well, of course. Of course, the answer is yes. Because how could I say no? It's a kingdom thing. So what happens is they get to about here with people and vision and go, do you know, starting to feel quite heavy at the moment. You know, carrying a lot of things at the moment, but you know, I'm sure that's what it means to be a Christian. It's what the Lord would want for me. And more people come along and more requests for load. And so slowly but surely things start increasing. And like now at this point here, it's like, honestly, I can't carry anymore. And then they start getting critical and going, why does nobody care about me? Why is it that everyone always comes to me? Why does everyone ring up me wanting me to help them? Why does no one ever ring me to ask how I am? And they start to become sometimes very critical of others around them. Then they feel more guilty because they think, oh God, that's not very Christian, is it? So they think, oh, maybe I ought to take on just a little bit more because, I mean, everyone keeps asking me and they're God's people and surely I have to help. Until in the end this happens. And they drop the lot. And they go, I just can't do this anymore. And they're gone. And unless they really go around the circle and learn, the same happens again. And often their life, if they're not careful, can be a repetitive cycle of taking on more and more and more and more and more, and then just getting exhausted and burnt out. Now, yours is a slightly more complex one, because I'm not sure necessarily... Does that ring any bells? Yeah.
And I've learned deeply by that, and I've worked at it, and I can say no.
Yay. But if you've got ENFJs, you know, recognize that that's what's going on with them. And I always say to them, I say, look, particularly if T's can help them, don't take on more tasks. Once you get to this point, and you know when you're getting there, don't accept anything without actually doing some processing of whether it's a good thing. Because you're so capable as a person and so resourceful, people will always seek you out. Demand will always exceed your capacity to supply. That's the problem with them. And what they do is they find it really hard to let people down. So therefore they just keep taking more and more on until they drop the lot. So I always say, be accountable. Never say yes there and then. Build yourself a safety mechanism which says, that sounds really exciting, I'm going to go away and pray about it and process it with my accountability partner and I'll come back to you. Because if people come to me going, I've got a new thing, I really believe the Lord's called me to, I say, well, that's fantastic, what are you going to let go of then? Because the Lord says, take my yoke upon you, for my burden is easy and it's light. It's not meant to kill you. That's not honouring me, you weren't listening. You've tried to carry my load, not the load I gave you. That's the classic challenge for the ENFJ. Yeah, does that sound? But gatherer of people, great discipler, pour everything you've got into people, you know. And they're usually fun to be around, always exploring something new. Sense of humour, things like that. So that's the ENFJ. ISTJ, so Cindy and Michelle. Where have we got those? No, hang on. Cindy's an ISTJ, and who was the other one? Jean. ISTJs are some of the most disciplined, organized people I know, and they love their work. A lot of their identity is often defined by work and getting the job done. And one of the things they are is usually absolute perfectionists who find the art of delegation a real challenge. Because no one will ever do it quite as perfectly as they will. And so therefore, they would often rather sometimes take on more and more and more onto themselves until in the end they get exhausted and then start becoming very crabby and grouchy with people. Yeah. And the key thing they want with the people, they love being around often people with vision. And what they do is, you see, is they love to be included as part of the team. But what they hate is where they're given not enough detail of what they're being asked to do. So with the ISTJs, if you can provide for them enough concrete and to program the coordinates of what it is you really want them to deliver and to give them the opportunity to come back to you if you don't feel you've given them enough, they are the most loyal, disciplined, reliable people ever. They would rather die than be late for something or not finish a task or let people down. My challenge to them often is this. Because they get to play and affirmed with the hands that they were given. Because once somebody knows someone's an ISTJ, most apostles love them. Most pioneers love them. Because they're the means by which vision becomes reality. But they often get put into the same box in every area of their life. So they don't often get a chance, nor do they necessarily seek it, to be quite honest, a chance to use their other hand and explore other parts of their character. So when it comes to the thought of being evangelists, apostles and prophets, usually they're just not that excited about it. And because most people can find a brilliant place on the team, they simply get better and better at doing a smaller and smaller amount of specialist task and project management and organisation and administration. And my challenge always to them is to go, sometimes us who are apostolic visionary characters actually have to take responsibility for stretching you beyond the place where you're comfortable. And that usually means taking you into a more pioneer season sometimes, if not in work, in life, where the Lord calls you to gather people, pioneer a new thing for him, explore, you know, some of those other places that are out there for you. Now, that is always quite frightening because you're moving from that is concrete, predictable, and where you're really affirmed for what you do into a world where it seems very, very vague, very uncertain, and you're absolutely certain that there's other people who are better at doing it than you. And the last thing you ever want to do is demonstrate your incompetence to the external world. Yeah? So learning to use spiritual gifts and things like that, it's honestly not the most exciting thing in the world. If there was a chance that you could actually develop them in private and work at them without anybody knowing and then unveil them when they were completed and perfect, that would be fine, as it is with most skills. But that's usually one of the key challenges for the ISTJ, is learning to recognise that you won't be perfect at doing everything immediately. And part of the growth is often in having to learn from the things we don't do well. Yeah, how does that sound, Cindy? Does that ring any bells for you?
A few.
Jean? See, yours is interesting, see, because as a salesman, you would have learned to use a whole load of different skills. That's what's really interesting to me, because you have that kind of relational charm, which is not always associated with ISTJs, if I'm honest. So it means you've really learned to use your other hand as well, which usually makes you a much more complete person. Which is really, you know, for ISTJs to be salesmen and, as it were, to be happy in leadership roles shows in some ways that, you know, you've really allowed the Holy Spirit to do the work in you over the years, even if sometimes it's been painful and not necessarily the way that you would have preferred it to be. That's what I keep coming back to here, is what does it mean for you to grow into fullness and maturity of everything God wants for you? You will be someone, Cindy, who's brilliant with your right hand. But the chances are, you may not have actually explored other places where you've actually had to grow through not getting it right. And the one that I always encourage people to play with if they really want to grow is start asking God for the gift of the prophetic insights into what's going on. Because it's enough of an introvert world that you're able to spend some time there. But what it will do is it will cause you to not always deal with the concrete. It causes you to deal with some of the more abstract concept of actually what it means to listen to God and run the risk of not always getting it right. I mean, Paul says this, he says, eagerly desire the spiritual gifts, particularly the gift of prophecy. It literally means burn after with a white hot desire. I mean, eagerly desire doesn't do justice to what it really means. So if someone's going to say, who's a real settler and a brilliant at what they do, I'd really like to explore a little bit of what it means to pioneer, I often give them that Bible verse because it's concrete enough for them to go, well, if it's in Scripture, then maybe I could do that. But what I need is some people who are really good at it to help me. And I guarantee there'll be people out there who are much more naturally gifted at that stuff, but who would love to learn some of your discipline, order, structure, and things that happen. Need to weigh that one, but that's kind of, as I look at you, that's my sense that there's a desire to grow. But usually ISTJs need someone to help put structure and a plan in place so they feel there's an element of safety as they do it. High support for you means lots of stones and step-by-step help. The challenge, well, I'll always give you challenge, so that's just the nature. And every time I see you now, I'll ask. Okay? I hope kind of you're happy sort of sitting there listening to these things. ENTP, Nate, ENTPs are the most naturally gifted entrepreneurs there are. They could sell sand to the Arabs and make black sound white and white sound black. And in terms of their resourcefulness and their capacity to align systems and people, they are as good as it gets. And they're always fun. They always bring a huge amount of life and slight amount of chaos to whatever relationships they're involved in. They're often seen as either catalysts for change or troublemakers. Depending on how you are viewed and seen, often gives those clues. One of the things that I always challenge ENTPs in is the capacity not to delegate things too quickly. Because the new frontier is always so exciting. They're always wanting to do a new thing. And because they themselves, if somebody really wants to bless you, I give you, Nate, I want you to go and achieve this, and here are the resources. Come back every month and tell me how you're doing, and we'll have a coffee. Because that's actually me telling you how fantastic I think you are. Often what happens is, in the square, they go deep, they're brilliant at casting vision. Come follow me, this is where we're going. But often they struggle to really walk with people through the pain of D2. Because it involves time, and it involves being physically present, both physically and emotionally with people. And because they're NTs, the SF component of the D2, which is, I give you time, not just to sit in my office while I do my email, but actually I will be physically present with you, because the good leader knows the only way people get out of D2 is through the ladder of climbing on their leader. And the task of the leader in D2 is to preach vision and grace. Remember why we started off on this. This is where we're going. Hold out the hope. Don't change the vision. And recognize that it is a gift of grace. If God has called us to this, we actually have to come to the end of our own resources so that actually we can really believe that the kingdom comes, not because we work at it, but Jesus said, don't worry, little flock, for your Father is pleased to give you the kingdom. You have so many natural resources and skills. It's very hard for people to see the join of where your skills end and the Lord's skills begin. And most ENTPs can make everything sound just right. But often they are Josephs, for those of you here yesterday morning, who really have, the world does spin around them a bit in their own mind. And also, the temptation is always to believe that they can probably fix most things and God might be able to help every now and again if they need him. As opposed to the Joseph process, which was dying to self, to the point where all of those gifts, all of that immense capacity to lead and lead others, becomes actually, you have it. So when Joseph turns around and says, or Pharaoh says, do you know anyone who can interpret dreams? Joseph says, I can't, but I know someone who can. Or the God who I love and worship can. That only ever usually comes through dying and pain-free ENTPs, because they're so resourceful and so able to bounce and weave, and that it never quite sticks on them. But that's, you know, to own that gift and to allow usually somebody around you to bring that discipline and structure. Not to try and be the best at attention to detail and project management, but to learn how to bring people in alongside you who release you to be the entrepreneur for people, who calls others always spirits to lift and believe things are possible. ENTPs, anything is possible. There's always a way. No matter how black the situation, we will find a way. And that's a real gift, but it's only usually if that comes through the lens of, God, I'm a broken man, honestly. I empty myself so that you may fill me. Take the gifts, take the skills, take all my 10 talents that you've given me and teach me how I use them under your authority rather than, you know, the prayer, put me to what you will. Point me to, you know, I don't know it, but do you know what I mean? Some of you will know. That is such a powerful prayer for the ENTP. It should almost be on their computer because they bounce back so quickly and begin to believe it's them that made it happen. He speaks as one who knows. I'll check, because it's the prayer for the order of mission. It's kind of the prayer that is kind of a, you know, I'll find it for you though. Does that ring any bells? So ENTPs. ISTPs, Sarah, I'll come to you last, because my feeling is, you see, doing that to you at the moment when you're not sure, It's very rare that I spend this much time with a group of people and there's real lack of clarity. So that usually means we need to spend some time together, because there's usually reasons why there's not that clarity, and often it will go back into things in the past. So I'm not going to ignore you, and I promise I will give you as much time as you want, but actually doing it in front of everyone now may not be the solution. So it's not I'm ignoring you. INTPs, this is one for you to hear. INTPs have the least relational need of people of all the types. They are conceptual architects who are usually, their internal world is so rich and so full of potential of conceiving how things could be. They're often R&D specialists, conceiving of how things could be, well away from people, well away from the demands of kind of time and people given a chance. They're usually very, very clever people. They come out second in the IQ scores usually to the INTJs, which really annoys them. But it's usually because they're not as clever orally, but just they never quite get all the detail down in exams in quite the same way the INTJs do. So therefore, their base ministry, in my experience, is often prophetic, often have a very strong prophetic gift, but often they function it through the gift of teaching, because they're brilliant teachers. They bring things alive in incredibly imaginative, ingenious ways. And they spend so long mining out to make sure they are true experts in whatever they're teaching. But you see, the thing to me is, like, you know, where they are constantly giving of themselves to others and not having time to recharge their internal batteries, slowly but surely they start to lose some of those things. So my observation is, whenever I come to Joy, you're here. Wherever there are people around, you're in the midst making it happen. So actually, for a season, that pastoral role, that pastoral phase, eventually you'll run out of grace for it. You may well have run out of grace for it. And understanding that actually the miracle is, because INTPs are so driven by a desire to be competent, that they will usually, whatever it is you give them to be, even if it's completely out of character, they will find a way to be really good at it. But what they don't realize until sometimes they're given permission through a lens like this, is to recognize why it's actually just almost exhausting at times. And that actually, if they're really going to flourish within the body of Christ, with the gift, the strategic gift that the INTP is, it usually means they have to spend time alone, and time alone with the Lord. And often their productivity will be considerably higher if they're working less and being alone more. Talk to me. Yeah.
That I am able to recharge.
Right.
Because when I'm done, I'm really, really, really done. I'm not plotting or planning.
Yeah.
And the prophetic has always been very strong in my life.
Mm.
That just tends to help me know it's all been done.
Yeah.
As I spend time doing.
That's brilliant. I mean, you know, for you to... Rhythm of life is very important for INTPs. You only have so much relational capital, and I'm going to talk to Deb as well at this stage. INTJs, INTPs, have the least relational capital to invest. People tire them out more than just about any other type. So therefore, it's much more important that you're strategic in who you invest that in. Because of the gift in terms of the intellectual, conceptual capacity that God's given you, you should be discipling leaders. Not necessarily doing all of the serving and the kind of the almost the kind of the stuff which is the natural pastors who have the capacity to care for people long term. Now you'll be doing it because you feel you ought to, and there are seasons in life where God calls you to, but actually sometimes you're not fully using or serving the wider body by doing the thing that makes you feel less guilty. Sometimes to use the strategic gift and the capacity to lead, which is what those gifts are, actually means sometimes having to let go of some of the things that, you know, make you feel better about yourself and actually start discipling strategic relationships. And not, and, it, and being very strategic about how you sow your venture capital, which is your time. Different base ministries, you see, INTJs are always apostolic. They're always the pioneers. But people don't always get that because they're introvert and they don't talk about it a lot. But they are the, they see what could be and are brilliant at moving the chess pieces around the board to make it happen. The thing is with NTs is they often feel guilty for just not caring about people enough. And therefore, a lot of times in church, they feel they ought to be much more F. So they try and be compassionate. They try not to make tough decisions. And rather than press through to play the role the body of Christ needs them to, they often try and... It's almost too painful for them, and they kind of try and filter it through a different lens. Or they try and filter it through a different gift. And kind of what this does, hopefully, is in a positive, affirmative way, gives you permission to step into, as it were, the identity that God created for you. Because you're going to be nation. The issue with you guys is not... The issue will always be over checking that the covenant relationship is sound enough. Not so much with the INTP, because that's actually where everything comes from, but for the extrovert particularly, this idea of connecting, because you want to do things. You want to see the kingdom advance and lead people in that. We'll come back to it again, I'm sure. I mean, I'm only giving you my gut feel at the end of the day. ENFPs. Let's lighten the mood somewhat. We've got, how many of those? We've got 1, 2, 3, 4. They are the most delightful, charming, just a joy to have around. They're like the Labrador puppies of the Christian world. Everyone loves them. No home is complete without one. And they are incredibly gifted, incredibly talented, usually can do just about anything they put their mind to. If you have a look back over their life, they will have tried a whole host of different things because everything is just so exciting to them. The external world and possibilities for people and exploration. And what you watch them do is you go, right, this is the vision God's called me to. They go, right, this is the vision I'm working on, everyone. This is what I really believe God's called me to. And I'm really working really, really hard to make sure that vision really starts. And you know, I think the Lord may be calling me to something different. I don't know why, I just get a sense in my spirit that maybe, you know, I'm moving on and there's a new vision and a whole kind of, and this is what I'm going after now. It really is what I'm going after now. I'm going to be focused on delivering the vision the Lord's called me. Do you know, there's another exciting opportunity over here. So what they do is, vision is so exciting and their desire, as it were, to enter into it fully and fulfill potential for other people means that what they often struggle with is the discipline of actually following through on what it is God's called them to. And because they have such natural skills and gifting, they're able to deliver quite a lot in that slightly unfocused way. So they're classic 10-talent people, usually. They can usually do most things well, sickeningly well at times. Whatever they turn their hand to, they'll be good at. But what they deliver is often on 5 talents worth rather than 10 talents worth, unless somebody helps put a bit of structure and a bit of a straitjacket around what they do. What I do with them is this. So if you're leading one or you are one, seek it out. Come and tell me what you think God's called you to. What's the vision he's given? And I'll have to listen for quite a bit because there will be usually a whole load of diversionary tactics, even in this sharing of vision. A lot of the kernel of it will come out in the midst of everything else as well. And then I'll spend some time with them honing it down, not trying to give them a new vision, just trying to help them focus it down so it's a bit more concrete. And some of the objectives are smart objectives, if you understand that language. So what we'll do then is we'll have a final draft which says, this is what I believe God has really called me to do in this season. And I get them to sign the bottom of it, and I give them a copy, and I keep a copy. And we arrange to meet as often as they want, because they usually want to come back and talk about what God's doing, and they'll be full of stories, and they're great evangelists. You know, they can sell anything, absolutely anything, and people love them. So what we come back with, and when they start telling me that they think they've got a new vision, I pull out the paper that the Lord, we agreed last time, so is that your signature? And they went, yes. So, well, are these all done? Have we finished this? And they look at you and go, well, do you know, I really sense that the Lord may be leading me into a new season. And I go, no. Either the Lord didn't say this to you or you were wrong. Okay, that's one option. We can process together, but I don't believe it because I spent time with you last time. Or you can come to me with all the words and revelation that others have given you to say that actually the Lord really is moving you on. Because the great loving thing you can do for ENFPs is help them to fulfill the amazing potential God gave them. Left to their own devices, they have a natural temptation, particularly European versions, by the way, to become the jack of all trades and the master of none. Because they're so good at everything, everyone just allows them to keep jumping around, rather than sometimes saying, what is it is going to be your main thing that you become brilliant at? Because you have the capacity to become brilliant at just about anything, but also the capacity to drift your way through life sometimes and not fully being everything you could be, despite the fact everyone will think you're wonderful. So I'm often quite hard on ENFPs because I actually see how much potential God has put in them. They are often the most gifted leaders if they will discipline their lives and allow others to help discipline their vision, because people trust them. People know that when you've got NFs, the vision is always about the fulfillment of potential for people. As I said, to kind of let people down or to, you know, sacrifice people for the vision is such an anathema. They could never do it. NTs, on the other hand, are the strategic chess players. They know where they're going, and they've got pawns on the board, they've got different pieces, and ultimately, if sacrificing the queen, the bishop and the rook means in 4 moves time we actually win the game, it's not easy, but they will sacrifice people for the ultimate strategic victory. For NFs, that's impossible. Which is why most people follow NT leaders, because they know how competent they are. But they also know the rules of engagement are, at some stage, I may become part of the sacrificed piece. NFs, once you're part of their team, you'll always be part of their team. They'd rather lose an arm than sacrifice people. Isn't that right, guys? Does that ring any bells, Michelle? America disciplines ENFPs in a way that Britain doesn't. It's fascinating to watch, because you grow up in such a strong work ethic and a desire to make sure, you know, it's a competitive world you're in. And ENFPs are quite competitive, actually, if you set them in the right environment. So actually, it's quite a competitive culture. So therefore, a lot of them over-deliver. What I've noticed is, in England, we just don't have that yet. It's also, you know, particularly the church, very, very relational, very, very airy-fairy. So, good on America, that's what I say. It's good for ENFPs to come out here, and I hope they do a scholarship plan for many more of them. Vision for people, entrepreneurs for people. Bring that fun life and vitality to the body of Christ, and that slight unpredictability and chaotic nature, and that loving relational dynamic that you bring. Because honestly, you bring a smile to most people's faces most days. And that's a real gift. Because some people's glasses are always half empty by nature. Others are half full. Yours, regardless of what's in the bottom, is practically brimming over. Because whatever is there, you always see the possibilities of how that can be multiplied. And I love them for it and care deeply for them. I want them to be all they can be, which is why I'm sometimes harder on them. How are we doing? We're nearly there. ESFJs, Christina. ESFJs are wonderful gatherers of people around them. They're like mother hens. They kind of, if you come under their circle of protection and provision, then they will... Their care and capacity to attend, as it were, to what people need is just fantastic. Phenomenal attention to detail. Very, very good at making things happen. If ever you want a party organised, something to happen for people, these are the type of characters you want, because they take huge delight in actually caring for people's need and delivering for them in the present. They're not great necessary strategic visionaries. They'd much rather see the kingdom come in the present. So actually, if you say to them, are you excited about heaven? This would be the same for most senses, by the way. They think they ought to be excited, but there's not a lot of detail, is there really? You know, what are we going to do when we get there? Intuitives, beyond what I can even ever imagine or dream of. And honestly, I can dream and imagine a huge amount. So I'm sure heaven will be awesome. But for the senses, particularly sense of feelers, Lord, your kingdom come this day on earth as in heaven. I'd love to see justice for the poor. I'd love to see the sick healed. I'd love to see the marginalized nurtured. And I'd really like to see more of your kingdom come now. That's usually what really excites the sense of feelers, which is why they're often the ones who serve most lovingly, most loyally within the body of Christ. You know, they're the foot soldiers of the kingdom, and they don't often get affirmed for everything they do. But actually, they're such an important component. I love them. You know, they get things done, and they love getting things done. But it's usually about actually getting things done for people and for the wider vision and values of what's going on. Yeah? So put them around a real good visionary and let them feel part of the team and let them feel that they really matter and really count. They become some of the best lieutenants you could ever have in the battle. And they're brilliant for NTs particularly, who are tempted to assume that there won't be any cost at all if we make that change. Whereas you will probably be attuned to what are the relational issues and who's going to be deeply offended and upset if we announce this particular change at this time. Would that be true?
Yeah.
I'm talking to Nate here, by the way.
Yeah.
He knows already.
So you've got sounding boards around you. You need to learn how to use them effectively because, honestly, they love it. Sound reasonable? I'm aware of time as we go on. ENFP. ISFP. Wow. Flipping heck. What you need to know is that Glenn is the senior pastor of one of the largest churches up in Omaha and has done an amazing job growing that and nurturing that over any number of years. And honestly, in terms of profile, for someone to build large church, the ISFP is like, I've never come across one. I really haven't. And I'm going to be fascinated to find out what that culture looks like. Because leaders always define culture. Over a period of time, leaders define culture. And actually, what they give permission for, everyone else gets permission for. What they don't, they don't. So an ISFP, you see, is almost what I call an incarnational prophetic type. What they usually do is, when they feel that God has called them to something, it's usually because there is a total congruence between the work they do and the person that they are. So actually, they don't like to compartmentalize their life. They usually like to know that every component of it is towards living out the values and the calling that God's put upon them for people. So they often end up living at the heart of the community of the people they're trying to serve. In every way, they immerse themselves into the very fabric of that community. Sometimes you see it with social workers and people who go and live in the communities, even the tougher states that they serve, because they're incarnational people and they're constantly looking for integrity between the words that they use and the life that they live. And when I call them prophetic incarnational prophets, they kind of look at me and go, "What do you mean?" What I mean usually is they prefer to live at the challenge that they offer usually comes out of the life that they live rather than the words that they speak. So as people spend time around them, because of the depth often and the integrity which runs through them like a stick of, you know, like a rock, what you find is as I spend time with an ISFP, they challenge me to become more the person God calls me to be. But they don't do it in a way which makes me feel I've been attacked. They do it by simply sharing their life and modeling for me how I can grow in those particular areas, which is why they're often wonderful leaders if they'll accept the mantle of leadership. Often they don't want it. Often they'd rather serve almost behind the scenes or within a smaller defined area. There's no huge desire to grow anything massive in an ISFP usually. There's no, look at what I've done. Look at what the Lord's doing in and through me. There's often this desire simply to be the hands and feet of Christ, immersed in that community, being good news to the poor, and challenging people to the kind of, to concretize the good news. Don't know if that sounds any... My suspicion is, you see, is because that's not the way you will recognise that, the referee of peace in here will be going, yes, Glenn, that is who I made you to be. That is your identity. But actually, you've been so gifted, you've actually ended up playing so many other roles over the years and learned to use your other hand that in some ways, I'm so excited because I think the next season of leadership for you will actually be often connected more now to the understanding of who God's made you and will release you to give you permission to do many of the things you probably feel you ought to have done or many things you wanted to do but didn't feel you were necessarily allowed to do because there's a great desire to conform and not to rock the boat and not to draw attention to oneself because what I really want to be is I want to be able to serve a small group of people, serve the Lord, make sure the integrity of the words I say is lived out in the person that I am. And that challenge, yeah. Well, I will keep praying and processing that one because that's exciting. I've never met one. I've never met a senior leader of such a large church who's grown it as an ISFP. I'm really excited because what I love to do is to find fantastic examples of people who've broken the type stereotypes. So, you know, that's why I love sometimes the kind of the diversity and difference within the body and understanding that that's the type of things that God has made us to do. No one can box you using this stuff. Don't let anyone tell you can't do anything because you haven't got the right letters. Yeah, you must hear that from me. I hope I communicate that all of them are equally valid in God's eyes. In fact, Christ's likeness and growing into maturity will mean we learn how to use all of those things more fully as we grow. But it's always easier to grow from a foundation where we understand where we're starting from so that we can return to it in order that we may grow. So the Lord will take you into new seasons or phases as we call it, but he'll always allow you to come back to the thing that you're most comfortable with because it rebuilds you, it re-energizes it, it causes you to kind of feel good about yourself again, and then he'll often be looking to grow you and challenge you some more. You guys have been awesome. I'm 5 minutes late, so I apologise for James, but I'd love to pray for you. Is that okay? And then I'm going to send you on your way. Lord, I love the more I explore, Lord, the gift of human life, the more amazed I am at how you've woven us together in such unique ways. And Lord, just thank you so much for giving us all the time today just to be able to set aside this, to explore more of who you've made us to be. And Lord, my prayer is as always at this time of day, is where I've spoken just chaff, I pray it would burn away. But Lord, in the midst of this stuff, where there's been real gold, where there's your word to your people, your hungry people today, Lord, I pray that seed will be planted now, deep in their hearts, Lord. I pray that it wouldn't be allowed to be taken away. I pray the enemy wouldn't be allowed to steal, Lord, what it is you're doing in each and every life here. And Lord, as we grow in our knowledge and understanding of the people you've made us, Lord, may it cause us to delight in the gift and the opportunity you give each of us to play within the body of Christ. Thank you that you gave us all different gifts, different roles, unique personalities, and you weave us together, Lord, when we let you into a formidable team to see your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.